From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Joseph Backholm.
Welcome to Washington Watch. I'm Joseph Backholm, sitting in for Tony today on this Friday edition of Washington Watch. Great to have you with us. A couple quick reminders. This election year, join us in Washington, D.C. from October 3rd through October 6th for our Pray, Vote, Stand Summit. This is a national gathering of spiritually active, governance-engaged conservatives, SageCons. It recognizes that change must flow from spiritual renewal. Registration is open now, and I encourage you to join us as we pray for our nation, engage in government and culture, and stand for biblical truth. Visit prayvotestand.org for details and to register. Coming up today on the show, the Supreme Court has weighed in on a case out of Arizona about whether you should have to prove your citizenship before you can vote. Will this case, because it's in Arizona, determine who the next president is? We'll tell you about it. Also, a new movie about the life of Ronald Reagan is about to be released. Kevin Sorbo is one of the actors in that movie, as well as a producer, and he'll stop by to tell us all about it. Also, what's the difference between a Christian conscience and a cultural conscience? And how do you know what you have? That's coming up today in our worldview conversation with David Klassen. But our headlines today, last night in Chicago, Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris made her pitch to the American people just a month after her elevation to the top of the ticket following President Joe Biden's withdrawal from the race. How will voters respond to Harris's quickly assembled campaign and messaging? And what will be the key issue in this final 75-day sprint until Election Day? Joining me now to tell us about it and more is Congressman Randy Weber. He serves on the House Committee on Energy and Commerce, the Committee on Science, Space, and Technology. He's also a co-chair of the House Bipartisan Task Force for Combating Anti-Semitism. He represents the 14th Congressional District of Texas. Congressman Weber, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Joseph. Good to be here.
Good to have you. What was your reaction to the speech last night and the events of this week in Chicago?
Well, I watched all of her speech last night. I didn't get a chance to watch all the events, but I know I've seen them before. We've seen this movie before, the old saying goes. Let me say this, Joseph. She said the word Trump more than she said crime, inflation, border security. You can go right down the list. She was so focused on trying to lie about Trump, it was incredible.
Now, do you think, typically coming out of these conventions, there is a post-convention bounce that candidates experience because it's a kind of a week-long infomercial for whoever the party's nominee is? This is a little bit different because it seems like there's been about a month-long infomercial being run for her ever since she kind of ascended to the top of the ticket for the Democratic Party. Do you think that will mute the post-convention bounce that would otherwise be expected?
Well, she'll probably get a little bit of a bounce, but if you follow through on what she said last night, if you paid attention and you started to think about it, she told the following lies about Trump. She said he was going to cut Social Security. He was going to kill Medicaid. He would jail journalists. I recorded the video, Joseph. I've got to record. I went back to make sure I was right about that. She said he would use the military against American citizens. She said that he would enact a nationwide ban against abortion with or without Congress. And she's just trying to create fear and angst in her base so that they'll come out and support her. But I think the American people are more focused, as we know, the things she didn't really talk about. And that's inflation, securing our border. Although she talked about securing the border, but I'm thinking, you've been there almost 4 years, lady. Why haven't you secured the border, especially since you were the border czar? So I think when Americans stop to think about what she's trying to pull, how she's trying to pull the wool over their eyes, they'll see right through her.
And actually, I want to give people a chance to see a little bit of that conversation since you mentioned it. Here is a clip from her speech last night talking about the border.
And let me be clear. After decades in law enforcement, I know the importance of safety and security, especially at our border.
Now, there she is saying she understands the importance of that, especially at the border. They seem to be trying to flip the script a bit, saying that she is the tough on border and tough on crime candidate. And in fact, Donald Trump is the obstacle to that. Can she sell that to the public?
Well, she sure tried, but I don't think so. The American public is smarter than she's given them credit for. And look, they had 3.5 years to secure that border. You remember this, Joseph. The Democrats were more interested in getting 87,000 IRS agents to ride herd on Americans, using old Texas saying, than she was in securing the border. She could have put those things that Donald Trump had in order, back in order, remain in Mexico, stop, catch, and release, and those kinds of things that Trump had secured our border with. She's had 3.5 years. I think Americans are going to see, you know, she's trying to do, Joseph, in my opinion, she's trying to paint herself as a moderate. She's trying to paint herself as a moderate. The truth is, she's against bail for criminals having to pay bail. She's against fracking. She supported the IRS agents, 87,000. In 2019, she was voted the most liberal senator in the Senate. So she's trying to, if you will, tack to the right. And I think Americans are going to see through that.
Well, she is definitely trying to present herself as a moderate, but she's also trying to present herself, it seems, as the challenger, which is unique. Oftentimes in a convention like this, you would tout the record of the previous 4 years when you're on the ticket, talk about how well things have been going, and say, don't we want to build on this? But that is not the case that she's making. Joe Biden, I don't know for sure that he wasn't mentioned, but is almost never mentioned anymore. He has been moved past very, very quickly. And she speaks as if she is the change candidate, despite being in office for 4 years. Why do you think that is? And will the American public buy that?
Well, they're not as gullible as she thinks they are. She did mention him at the first of the speech, thank them, him and his wife, Jill, her and her husband did. But she's trying to, of course, distance herself from him. That was into that. And then she went into all this tirade. She even said she was going to fix the housing industry. And you, I don't know if you remember, in 2008, we had a housing crash. You know, the government eased restrictions. People could buy, get loans easily without as much down payment, without a good credit, necessarily credit score. She's going to fix everything, according to her. Now, we all know that Biden didn't fix anything. He only exacerbated the problems. She even says she's a strong supporter of Israel. And I'm like, really? We watched this. We've seen this show. Y'all delayed arms to Israel multiple times. So I don't think you can sell that to what you perceive to be your Jewish friends, Kamala.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting, I think, to a lot of people that she is not running on a record of the past, and she's trying to convince people, because it seems like there's a couple options here, because all the things she says she can do, she can lower prices, she can lower inflation, all of those things. It seems to me, in the back of the minds of every American, is like, if you can do that, go for it. Like right now, we're excited about that. Why is she withholding that power if she has it?
Well, the truth is she can't, and she knows she can't. You know, there's three ways fairy tales start. You know, once upon a time, or honey, if you'll marry me, or if I'm elected. And she's using that third fairy tale to say that she can do all these things. Just let her be president of the United States. And of course, we know that that's an abject lie. That's not her philosophy. She's one of the most liberal people you're ever going to find. Joseph, she even said that when she was a prosecutor, she fought the drug cartel. She doesn't know what it is to fight the drug cartel on the border. She doesn't know what it is to have to struggle for housing and to get a loan and those kinds of things. But she sure makes out like she does, like she's absolutely, you know, the person to save this country. And the truth of the matter is, their philosophy has got us in it. Oh, she said Donald Trump would increase the deficit. Since when did a liberal senators get interested in worrying about the deficit? I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
Yeah. With that background, what would you expect her policy priorities to be if she were elected?
Well, she talked about, you know, voter reform. Basically, they're going to try to make sure, and a pathway to citizenship. And there's already a pathway to citizenship. We know that. do it legally, secure the border and do it legally.
Yeah.
And she knows that, but that's not what they want, Joseph. They want illegals in here to increase the base. They want more population in New York, more population in California, so they can get more electoral college votes, if you will. She knows exactly what she's doing. And I think people will see through that. She can't improve the immigration system by letting what she's going to bring back the bill, she said, that came out of the Senate that was voted down in the House. And why was it? I voted against it. It was DOA. Why was it? Because it let 4,000 illegals in a day. Now do that math. 30 days, that's 120,000 a month. What kind of advantage is that? So she's trying to play both sides of the aisle, if you will. I think people are going to see through her.
Now, Congressman, I actually spent the week in Chicago talking to delegates to the convention. And one of the things that was most surprising to me is how disinterested they were in the immigration issue. On the left, it is just not something they think about. It's not something they talk about. And I was told on several occasions, the only reason people are concerned about that issue is because they are racist. And that's where it's gone a lot on the left. But we are in the middle of the August recess. You're back in your district. What are you hearing from voters right now?
Well, exactly what I've been espousing. And let me come back on something you said. Remember the name Riley Gaines?
Sure.
Remember the names of the young girls that have been raped and killed and some of them tortured and just unbelievable. You're absolutely right. For whatever reason, the Democrats are staying away from the fact that we have, and I'll call them terrorists, coming across our southern border, and they're killing American people. In Texas, down on the Texas border, when I was in the Texas legislature, I was the vice chairman of the Borders Committee. It was bad then, worse now. In Texas, they're breaking into homes, they're stealing cars, they're running down fences on farms and ranches so that cattle are getting out. They're wreaking havoc. And one of our Border Patrol retirees told us about 3 months ago at a Border Security Caucus that about 53,000 special interest aliens had been noted at the border. Those are the ones they know about, Joseph. Those aren't the ones that got away. If 10% of them got away, it's 5,300. If 1% of them got in, it's 530. And yet in 2001, with the trade centers going down, it only took 19 terrorists to bring down our trade centers. It's only a matter of time. And the Democrats say that that's going to happen. We're going to be hit with terrorism. And the Democrats seem like they don't care. They're oblivious to it. You know, Kamala and Joe, they've got it all under control. That's kind of their attitude. And it's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, that is the attitude. What's your encouragement in about 10 seconds for what voters need to be doing right now?
Well, get out and vote. Let's not wait to vote. Republicans, a lot of them, I was election clerk, election judge, precinct chair for 16 years in Brazoria County. A lot of them want to wait till the actual election day, but don't do that. Get out an early vote. Yeah. Get your friends out to vote. There's a lot at stake. There's a great phrase out of the Bible, Joseph, that I take great solace in, and it's this: to whom much is given, much is required. And so
I tell Randy Weber.
I tell
Thank
my
you so
friends,
much.
Get out.
Gotta be
Thank
with you.
You.
Good
Thank
to be
you,
with Joseph. You. Point of clarification, Riley Gaines is in fact alive and well. There have been illegals who have killed young women in America, but fortunately, she is not one of them. Coming up after the break, an important case out of Arizona. We'll tell you about it when we come back.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Joseph Backholm, sitting in for Tony today. Yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court provided a partial victory to an effort in Arizona to enforce proof of citizenship for voting. The court declined, however, to allow elements of the law that requires voters to document their U.S. citizenship to vote in this year's presidential election. Now, in practice, proof of citizenship will be required for new voters in some circumstances. Joining me now to discuss what this means for November is Ken Klukowski, a former senior counsel in the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice and a former special counsel in the White House's Office of Management and Budget. He has also litigated constitutional cases up to the U.S. Supreme Court. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Joseph. Great to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. This is a bit complicated and convoluted, but really important. What exactly does this case mean for Arizona?
It does get into the legal weeds a little bit, and that is we have to go back a ways. It's Arizona in 2004 passed a law saying that you had to present proof of citizenship to participate in an election. Now, there's a federal law that allows a federal agency, the EAC, the Election Assistance Commission, to also have a federal form that people in any state can use to register. So in every state, you both have your normal voter registration form, which is always set up, you know, by state law. And then you also have this federal option, this federal form. And so and Arizona was requiring proof of citizenship for everyone in the state, no matter which form they were using. That got challenged all the way up to the Supreme Court. And in 2013, the court held that because federal law allows for this federal form, that only the federal government can set requirements for that. So if you're using the federal form in Arizona, you don't need proof of citizenship. But if you're using the normal form, the state form, then yes, the state could require it. So that was the state of the law from 2013. Then in 2022, the Arizona legislature passed a new law, an election integrity law. And, you know, we've seen a lot of those in the country in 2021, 2022. For that matter, I do a lot of election integrity work with your own Ken Blackwell, you know, who does great work there at FRC. He and I do a lot in the election integrity space together. And in this 22 law that Arizona passed, it says that you also need to present proof of citizenship if you want to participate in a presidential election in that state, or if you want to participate in mail-in voting, if you want an early ballot during these huge and growing windows of early voting that we see in so many places around the country. And so that got challenged again by those on the left. And so you had a trial judge, a federal trial judge in Arizona, who issued an injunction against all this. So that goes up to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. But while that opinion, that appeal is ongoing, of course, we have an election right around the corner. And so the Republican National Committee, the RNC, sought a stay of the lower court injunction so that these laws could at least be in effect for the 2024 election. And that request for a stay ended up going all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And this is where we get the split decision. And that is that three justices, Clarence Thomas, Sam Alito, and Neil Gorsuch, voted in favor of granting a stay for Arizona on all of these counts, on all three of these issues. Four of the justices, the three liberal justices, plus Justice Amy Coney Barrett, voted to allow all of this to be blocked. And then two justices in the middle, Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Brett Kavanaugh, voted to say, okay, yes, you can still require proof of citizenship to register if it's the state form, but you cannot allow it. They allowed the injunction to continue when it comes to presidential elections and to early voting. So this was a partial victory and a partial defeat for those working for election integrity in this election.
Well, Ken, there is a lot there, but practically speaking, when you go to vote, you don't get a federal ballot and a state ballot. So does this mean that there is a way to get the ballot, the only ballot that a person can get without citizenship if you go through door number one, and you can get it, but you would be required to show proof of citizenship if you go through door number two? Is that practically how this works?
Well, if the stay had gone a different way, it's you would be looking at options like that. As it was, there were six votes to block the requirement for presidential elections. And so in the 2024 election, no one in Arizona needs to show any proof of citizenship. Now, the law, it would be allowed under the law. If you had an instance where federal law requires certain things when it comes to federal elections, that does allow the option of a state to take on the task. It would be enormously expensive, but they could set up a parallel election system just for state and local elections. As a practical matter, everyone does it on one unified ballot to avoid voter confusion, and also because it's a huge logistical task, and there's a big price tag on it. But in this case, where six justices voted to block that provision of Arizona law, or to be more precise, they let the lower courts block to continue while the appeal is ongoing. You know, each of the justices could still vote a different way when this appeal finally reaches them on the merits, which I would guess would probably happen in late 2025 or early 2026. But for purposes of the 2024 election right around the corner, no one is going to need to present proof of citizenship. They only have to do it when they're registering to vote. They would not have to do it in order to cast a ballot or get a mail-in ballot for early voting.
Ken, we're almost out of time here in a few seconds. This matters because Arizona is a swing state. Is there any way to know how many people might be voting without having proven their citizenship? 15 seconds?
There are a couple ways that could help. I mean, you've got the Federal Save database and you've got the Social Security number verification system. There are federal resources that you could use for that. But like we just saw a couple weeks ago, where Governor Glenn Youngkin discovered over 6,000 non-citizens on the voter rolls in Virginia, that shows in an election where outcomes can be decided by hundreds or thousands of votes, sometimes even less.
Yeah, it can make a difference. Ken, we're out of time, unfortunately. Up against a break, thank you for being with us today so much.
Thanks for having me. God bless.
And when we come back, Kevin Sorbo will talk about his new movie, Reagan, with us. Stay tuned.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Joseph Backholm, sitting in for Tony today. Next Friday, we'll see the release of the major motion picture, Reagan. This biopic of the 40th president of the United States tells the life story of a man who rose from a small town to the glitter of Hollywood to commanding the world stage at the height of the Cold War. Starring Dennis Quaid, Reagan offers a profound exploration of the enduring impact of the power of one man who overcame the odds at a crucial period in American history. Joining me now to discuss the film is actor and producer Kevin Sorbo, who co-stars in the film as the pastor for Reagan during his youth. Kevin, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good to be here. Yeah, you're right. I did it during the youth. So I didn't get to work with Dennis straight on this one because he played the older, wiser Reagan. I played the pastor too when he was in his teenage years and college years. And David Henry portrayed him and did a great job. And it was an honor to be part of this movie. Dennis and I actually worked together once before in a movie called Soul Surfer, The Life of Bethany Hamilton. And the reason I mentioned that because Sean McNamara directed us on that, and Sean McNamara also directed this movie as well.
You know, Kevin, it really is. It's well done. It covers his whole life. It's not just a political movie. It really is just about the life and story of a really important and significant man in America and in the world. But tell us about what drew you to be part of this.
Well, what drew me is that the first president I could ever vote for when I was old enough in 1980 was Ronald Reagan. So and for a kid growing up in the Hubert Humphrey Walter Mondale state of Minnesota at the time, my parents could not believe that I crossed a picket line and went to the other side, so to speak. And I remember telling them in my wise late teen years, I was like, well, you know, I think that Jimmy Carter is going to go down as one of the worst presidents we've ever had, as far as I can tell. Look what he's done to the country. And I was right for many decades. Then along came Obama, and then along came someone even worse, and Joe Biden. And now they got someone even worse than that in the form of Kamala Harris. So it's a kind of an interesting road to see what the Democrats are doing to their party, and hopefully what we can see with the resurgence of President Trump, because he was a pretty darn good president. I'd put him right up there with Ronald Reagan. So hopefully we'll have honest voting in America for a change. But you know, mail-in voting is a whole nother issue we can talk about.
Well, we do all hope and pray for honest voting, to be sure. As you did this movie on his life, is there anything you learned about him that you didn't know?
You know, not really, because, you know, when I lived in California, I escaped California almost 6 years ago. We live in the free state of Florida, so we left the worst governor of the country for the best governor of the country. But while we were there, we were only about 7 miles away from his library. And we're homeschoolers, and we would take the kids there every 3 or 4 months. We would go for 10 years and look at whatever new exhibit they had. And we studied a lot about it. And I've read a number of books on the man as well. So he's definitely in my favorite top two presidents, or maybe certainly in the top five presidents of America in my book. And, you know, it didn't really shock me or anything. I didn't know anything especially new, but it was just fun to be part of this movie because I think it's a wonderful story. And I hope both sides go to it with open minds and open hearts and just check it out. It's just a great movie.
You know, I have four teenagers myself, Kevin, and this is only important because as I talk to them, I realize about how much they don't know about the things that are in my memory now. And when we talk about figures in the 80s, they just don't know. And so I'm grateful for this because it's a way to introduce them to an important period of life that they just didn't live through. And sometimes I forget the things that they don't know about. And this is a great tool. It's a really, really well done and fun movie. But I understand there might be some parallels between President Reagan's faith journey, which is a big part of the story, and your own.
Oh, certainly there is. I mean, you know, to me, I've always been a Christian. I've always been a conservative as far as I knew, as far as, you know, politics got involved in my life when I got into high school. But, you know, Reagan went through quite a few changes in his life. I mean, he was a Democrat at one time. He was actually the president of the Screen Actors Guild before he became governor in California as well. You know, you look at what he realized, how important faith was in terms of not only leading the country, but leading his own life. He was a very, I mean, if anybody can ever get to his Santa Barbara ranch, he was a very humble man. When he brought Gorbachev there, Gorby could not believe that the house, he thought that was one of the servants' quarters. He thought he'd have some, you know, big castle or something like that. So it was interesting to see how of a humble man that he was and how much he loved this country and loved America. In fact, one of his, I won't say his, this won't be word for word, but of course, when he said, you know, we're only one generation away from losing our freedoms. And he was completely right. You look at the freedoms that are escaping us as Americans over the last 20, 30 years. It's unbelievable. And it's accelerating on itself. And, you know, we live in a very divided country right now. And I think we need somebody in that Oval Office that is a believer in what this country is and has been and what it has stood for. And so, you know, obviously I'm crossing every finger I got to say this has got to be Trump getting back in again. It has to be because we're well on our way on losing our country forever.
Well, Kevin, we've got about a minute left, but we know Hollywood's leanings generally. What kind of impact has a movie on Reagan had in the entertainment industry?
You know, we're going to find out soon enough, I think. You know what I find interesting? I mean, I'm really the first cancel culture victim out of Hollywood. I was booted out about 10 years ago by my agent of many decades saying we can't work with it anymore because of the things you're posting on social media. And I said, what's that, the truth? I mean, it's insane what we're doing right now. I don't post hatred. I don't post about killing people or attacking people or dividing people more. I just post the truth. My Twitter is very sarcastic, but there's a lot of truth that I post in there as well. But, you know, I get people on every movie set for the last 6, 7 years I've been doing come up to me and saying, hey, thanks for being a voice for us. And I go, you know, be a voice for yourself. But we both know fear is government's favorite weapon. They love controlling us through fear. And COVID was accelerated through that as well. But I always recommend people to go to my website. Please go there. It's sorbostudios.com, sorbostudios.com. It's my site along with my wife. And we do, Kevin, wonderful things about the upcoming movies we have, but also about
I've got to cut you off
things like that.
Because we are out of time. But sorbostudios.com. And the movie is Reagan. Go see it. You'll be better for it. And Kevin, thank you so much for your time today.
All right. All the best to you guys. Take care. God bless.
When we come back, what's the difference between a Christian conscience and a cultural conscience? We'll tell you about it. Stay tuned.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Joseph Backholm, sitting in for Tony today. The Democratic National Convention wrapped up last night in Chicago as Vice President Kamala Harris made her pitch to voters. While the event organizers showed a clear effort to present a more tempered and moderate presentation of Harris and the Democrats for swing voters, the DNC still contained messaging on abortion access through all 9 months of pregnancy in all 50 states, as well as a commitment to eliminating restrictions on the objectionable materials presented to school children. And at the same time, while that's going on, groups like Evangelicals for Harris are claiming she's the better option in the upcoming election because she, quote, better reflects Christian values. How should we navigate the facts and the spin and the narratives? How should we think Christianly about all of it? Joining me for a worldview discussion is David Claussen, director of the Center for Biblical Worldview at Family Research Council. David, good to see you today.
Hey, great to be with you again, Joseph.
So I know that you watched much, if not all, of the convention. What themes emerged for you?
Yeah, it was interesting over these last 4 days, Joseph. And, we want to think about these things through the lens of a biblical worldview. But just thinking about it broadly, it's interesting. There was a lot that was presented over 4 nights. And I'm still kind of confused on what the main policy positions that the Harris-Walz ticket are articulating. But it is interesting, Joseph, just to compare this convention with last convention 4 years ago when the Democrats had their convention in 2020. It's interesting. Let's just take one issue, for example, the abortion issue. When Joe Biden gave his acceptance speech as the nominee 4 years ago, he never used the word abortion. And in her speech 4 years ago, then vice presidential nominee Kamala Harris also never actually used the word abortion, used one of the euphemisms to refer to it. And so just amazing in a post-Roe kind of Dobbs world that we live in to see how the sacrament of abortion has really become the main issue that seems to define the modern Democratic Party.
I think I would agree with that. And Congressman Weber at the top of the show made the point that most of her acceptance speech last night had to do with Trump. And they are very clearly trying to present an alternative to Trump because he has some strong negatives, and they're basically trying to leverage his personality against him. And of course, they're running this joy campaign. So you're right. It's very light on policy, but it's very strong on we're nice. We're the joyful people. We're the happy people. We're the optimistic people. How do we navigate? And that's kind of an emotional, it's in a personal argument. And of course, we do want people to be kind and nice. And many of the criticisms of former President Trump on that level are probably fair. But how do we navigate kind of the lack of substance, though there's a lot of evidence there on policy, and the emphasis that's clearly being made on just personality, or these days we might say vibes?
Yeah, it is interesting. This is kind of the first campaign I can remember that seems to be run just kind of on a vibe, on emotion, on joy. It is reminiscent in some way of the 08 Obama election, where there was just so much enthusiasm, so much excitement. But even that 08 campaign, Joseph, there were clear policy distinctions between then Senator Barack Obama and Senator John McCain. I think this election, I think we have 75 days until voters go to the polls, and it'll be even earlier because of early voting, Joseph. Mm-hmm. What we need to do, I think, is really dive in to what these candidates actually believe. We have party platforms. Thankfully, Joseph, what's interesting, we have a record. We have 4 years of Donald Trump serving as president of the United States. We have 3.5 years of Kamala Harris serving as vice president. Kamala Harris, of course, ran for president in 2019 on a whole set of issues that she seems to not want anyone to know about these days. But I think that especially Christian voters, people who care about the truth, people who care about policies, it's going to require us to do a little bit more digging. It's going to require us to kind of sift through the issues and then to hold those issues up to God's word to see kind of where there's alignment and where there's not. And so I do think over the next couple of months, Joseph, it's going to require Christians to be extra thoughtful kind of as we look specifically at the issues, the party platforms, and then obviously the personalities.
Yeah. And what I think it's important for us as Christians to be able to do is look at the spin and look at the personalities and look at the talking points and sift through all that and try to be able to understand the underlying truth claims that represent all of this. And I want to pull out a couple examples from the convention. And the first one I want to go to is Oprah Winfrey. And we all, of course, know Oprah. And they brought her out because of her star power and her general appeal. And what I was looking for but didn't see is you get a new president and you get a new president and you get a new president, right? I think she missed that opportunity. But here's one thing that she did have to say. Let's go ahead and play clip one.
If you do not have autonomy over this, if you cannot control when and how you choose to bring your children into this world and how they are raised and supported, there is no American dream.
So, David, she's very clearly connecting the American dream to the issue of abortion. What's the underlying worldview that she's communicating there?
Yeah, the underlining worldview is an inherently very individualistic, non-Christian worldview. It's interesting to hear her talk about the bodily autonomy. And you heard that, Joseph, from several speakers at the DNC, which is, again, really interesting when you play clips of some of these same speakers during the COVID-19 pandemic that were those most energetically supportive of vaccine mandates and in favor of actually discharging soldiers who refused to get vaccines because of religious objections. And I think, again, it shows, Joseph, you know, the writers of the Declaration who talked about the foundational rights. You know, what are rights anyway? Well, government doesn't create any rights. It just recognizes rights that are given to us by a creator. And the most basic foundational right is the right to life. If you don't have that basic right, it's difficult to get any of the other ones. And it shows the worldview of someone like Oprah. This isn't surprising, Joseph, but for a thoughtful Christian, we need to connect the dots here. And again, the reason I talk about abortion, you know, I have a book coming out next year on abortion. The reason I focus so much on this is because the Bible actually says a whole lot about this issue. This isn't first and foremost a political issue. It's a theological and biblical issue. We have texts like Psalm 139 and Luke 1 that give us God's position, God's perspective. We don't have to guess what it is. And so, again, it's a shame. You know, the party that used to say abortion should be safe, legal, and rare is now giving out free abortions and puts floats of IUDs out front of their convention. So this is something I think that we should first and foremost be lamenting because it is a tragic turn that our culture has taken.
Well, related to that, Tim Walz, the vice presidential nominee, he made a point of saying that their respect for personal choices is kind of what sets them apart. Let's play clip three.
While other states were banning books from their schools, we were banishing hunger from ours. We also protected reproductive freedom because in Minnesota, we respect our neighbors and the personal choices they make.
Now, of course, this is, again, a reference to abortion and framing it under personal choice. And the premise that he is operating under there is personal choices are good. Now, Tim Walz has a broader record than just how he has dealt with abortion, and that includes setting up hotlines so that neighbors could tattle on each other during the pandemic if they had people over for dinner, against Tim Walz's orders not to have people over for dinner, right? So one's person, they say they respect personal choices, but what they really like is the choice to be able to abort your children. There are many personal choices that they do not support. Now, that's also true on the right politically, because no one respects the personal choice of anybody to do anything that they want. We recognize there are some things we should not have a choice to do. So this is a, you know, it's an applause line. That's what you're looking for at a convention. But he doesn't actually mean that, that just because it's a personal choice, it's good. And I wouldn't say just because it's a personal choice, it's good either. We like freedom, but what is the greater good, David? If personal choice shouldn't be our North Star, and it shouldn't, because that's ultimately anarchy. Everybody has to have limits in some ways. What should we be guided by?
Yeah, and I think this is really helpful because it, especially when we talk about issues related to sexuality, it seems that personal choice, expression, identity has become the most important, the most defining thing about someone. You know, scripture is really helpful. I'm thinking of Romans 13 here, Joseph, that kind of gives us the guidelines for even why God instituted something like government. It's to promote the good and to restrain evil. Well, there's a premise behind that, Joseph, is that there really are some things that are good and there really are some things that are evil. And who determines that? Is it me, myself, and I that gets to make that decision? Well, no. As a Christian, I would say that God's word ultimately reveals to us that there is a moral order that the Creator has designed. And God's moral order, his natural law, or his divine law, so to speak, is reflected in the natural law that theologians talk about. And so I think fundamentally, if you're building a worldview, you know, George Barna's articulated the seven cornerstones of a biblical worldview. One of those cornerstones, Joseph, is do you believe in absolute moral truth, that there are some things that are true for all people at all time, regardless of the circumstances? And I think this speaks to the fact that we do need to recognize that there is such a thing as moral right and wrong. And that conflicts with the narrative that many people, many of our friends and neighbors kind of orient their lives around today.
And I think it's also true, David, that if we go back to our founding, when we recognize that we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, and that starting assumption of where rights comes from has a lot to do with what we think rights are, because God does not ever give us the right to do things that are wrong. He does give us personal freedoms, and the founders delineated life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But he never said you have the right to take someone else's life if they interfere with your happiness. And that's being reframed by people like Tim Walz as, oh, it's personal choice, therefore it's good. You should have the right to make decisions for your life. Now, you should have right to make decisions for your life within constraints of what is good and what is evil. And the proper role of government is to encourage what is good, to discourage what is evil. But if we lose the shared understanding that God is ultimately the one who determines what is right and wrong, then it becomes chaotic. And that's kind of where we're at right now, as we culturally have segregated into those who believe that truth exists and those who do not, the secularists and the, you know, the theists, to paint with a very broad brush. But David, one other subject I actually want to get to you with, because it's very closely related to this. We talked about the kind of vibes campaign versus kind of the policy issues. And there's a lot of people. There's an organization called Evangelicals for Harris, and I know it's been discussed on the show a little bit, which has claimed, quote, that Harris is the one who better reflects Christian values. Because Trump has said some very mean things, and that is undeniable. And because he is mean and sometimes crude and harsh with people, Harris, who doesn't have petty nicknames for people, she better reflects Christian values. Is that an accurate assessment of the situation we find ourselves in?
I don't think so, Joseph. And I want to be clear, unless Jesus himself is on the ballot, there is no perfect candidate. We're always choosing between the lesser of two evils, so to speak, because we're choosing, again, whether it's county dog catcher or president of the United States, you're choosing between someone who's fallen, someone who's imperfect. You're choosing between a sinner. When it comes to this group, you know, Evangelicals for Harris, I think it's the same people who 4 years ago led the Evangelicals for Biden. It's really interesting because they do seem to paper over some of the positions that Kamala Harris has that are just diametrically opposed to biblical revelation. I know we've talked about it already a couple of times, but again, Kamala Harris is someone who in the Senate voted against the Born Alive Survivor Protection Act, which would provide protection for babies who survive abortion. She voted against bills in the Senate that would protect babies who can feel pain in the womb. It's all just issues that the Bible is really clear to. She has a diametrically opposed view. And for a group like this, Joseph, I wish almost they would at least acknowledge that. But again, they seem to want to paper over any kind of obvious deviation from scripture that the current vice president has taken, and that's not honest.
Yeah, and there's more to that, because Kamala Harris has a big record, and as Attorney General, she was an active defender of people who dissected babies and sold their organs on the open market. Right, this is not only illegal. There's literally nothing I can think of that is more evil than that. Yes. But we have consciences that have been conditioned to say, well, maybe that's not ideal, but it's less bad than those names that Trump calls people and the way he, you know, behaves sometimes. What's the difference? How do we know if our conscience is really being formed by the Bible? And people say, I'm offended by those names because God doesn't want us to call people names, but it's true. But I'm, you know, I wish that wasn't the case. I'm just less outraged by baby dissection. How does that happen?
It's a good question, Joseph, and it does speak to how, again, law is inherently pedagogical, and for two generations in this country, we have been told that an unborn child is just a clump of cells. We've been told that abortion, maybe even if it's not great, it's a moral necessity so we can do what we want sexually. Yeah. And I think generations of Americans have now they've been desensitized and have had their conscience coarsened. And that's up to the church. That's up to Christians to speak prophetically into that.
And I think also that if we are outraged by the things God is outraged by, then we have a Christian conscience. Yes. If we are outraged by the things the culture is outraged by, we have a cultural conscience. And the things that inflame us and outrage us and make us passionate, does that align with the culture or does that align with God? And I think that's a good test of whether our worldview has been formed by the Bible or it's been formed by the view. And I think we have a lot of people who call themselves Christians, but really their hearts and their passions are much more in line with the culture than it is with the Bible. But David, we're out of time today. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Joseph.
And friends, thank you for joining us today. Look forward to our next conversation on Monday when Jody will be back in the chair with you. Have a great weekend.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.